is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Mark Maselli.
And I'm Margaret Flinter.
Margaret, Congress came back from its recess, and it was pretty much a long shot that Chairman Paul Ryan's proposal to change Medicare into a program where the government subsidizes future retirees by buying them private health insurance was going to gather a lot of support. And it appears every day now that support for his initiative is dwindling.
I couldn't agree with you more. And, you know, it was always a given that President Obama and the Democratic leadership would not agree to that, which makes you wonder whether, in fact, Medicare wasn't the, I think you call it the clay pigeon to be shot down so the real target, Medicaid, the other large federal health entitlement program, could move into center stage. What we're seeing in Florida and the discussions we're hearing out of Washington gives one some real cause to think that that, in fact, is the target for significant and maybe unprecedented changes.
Margaret, I think you're right. Medicaid certainly is the focus now. But, you know, the negotiations around the debt ceiling are really trying to find an enormous amount of money, $2 trillion. And all those savings simply cannot come from Medicaid. It is relatively a small entity compared to the budget of Medicare. And so this conversation is going to be continued, and I think everyone should keep a close eye on it. We certainly will be following those negotiations here at Conversations.
Absolutely. And I do think across the country, people are wondering, what is the Obama administration going to do to address the issue of Medicare? A few weeks ago, we spoke about that independent payment advisory board. President Obama still wants this board to be in charge of finding ways to reduce Medicare spending. He said that he wants to strengthen the 15-member board, which would have the power to recommend cuts when Medicare spending exceeds projected targets. And I'm betting those 15 seats would be quite coveted.
They certainly will. But let's talk about something where people are agreeing, and certainly Democrats and Republicans can agree on the important role that nurses play in our healthcare system. It's National Nurses Week in celebration of Florence Nightingale's birthday on May 12th. Be sure to thank a nurse this week.
Well, Mark, thanking a nurse, I'm sure, will be appreciated by the millions of nurses across the country. But better yet, how about encouraging everyone to get on board with supporting those 8 recommendations of the Institute of Medicine and the Robert Wood Johnson Report on the Future of Nursing, which range from removing barriers to practice to supporting education and leadership development for faculty on up to funding and instituting residencies for new advanced practice nurses and new nurses. That would be a great present for National Nurses Week.
And a long-lasting one at that. We can start off by thanking our guest today, Donna Thompson, who is the Chief Executive Officer of Access Community Health Network in Chicago. And I should also note, a nurse. Access is the largest community health center organization in the country. We're so happy Donna is here with us today to share her model health center practices and some of the new directions planned for Access.
And no matter what the story, you can hear all of our shows on our website, chcradio.com. Subscribe to iTunes to get the show regularly downloaded, or if you like to hang on to our every word and read a transcript of one of our shows, come visit us at chcradio.com. And if you're a social media aficionado, become a fan of Conversations on Healthcare on Facebook. And don't forget, you can follow us on Twitter.
And as always, if you have feedback, email us at chcradio.com. We'd love to hear from you. Before we speak with Donna Thompson, let's check in with our producer, Lauren Bonner, with headline news.
I'm Lauren Bonner with this week's headline news. Lawsuits challenging federal health care reform are headed for a showdown in the appeals courts. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit heard arguments for 2 cases. The first is the lawsuit brought on by the state of Virginia, which argues that Congress exceeded its constitutional authority by requiring everyone to purchase health insurance. The other was filed by Liberty University, a private religious college in Lynchburg, Virginia, that objects to mandates placed on its employees. According to the Washington Post, the 3 judges who heard oral arguments on the 2 separate cases frequently appeared skeptical of arguments advanced by parties seeking to invalidate the law. Vermont passed legislation that puts the state on the path of becoming the first in the nation to establish a single-payer health insurance system. The bill sets up the framework by creating a board that will establish both the single-payer system and the health insurance exchange required under the Affordable Care Act. As long as the federal government complies, Vermont hopes to implement a single-payer system in 3 to 5 years. A new report from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention finds that asthma rates among Americans has risen sharply. Almost 1 in 10 children and almost 1 in 12 Americans of all ages now suffer from asthma. In addition, the study found that asthma is widespread among all groups, men, women, whites, blacks, and Hispanics. Black children, however, continue to be most affected. The number of black children with asthma has risen 11% since 2001.
This is Conversations on Healthcare. Today, we're speaking with Donna Thompson, Chief Executive Officer of Access Community Health Network in Chicago. Access is Chicago's largest private primary healthcare provider for the underserved and the nation's largest community health center organization. Welcome, Donna.
Thank you.
You became the Chief Executive Officer of Access in 2004, and since then, Access has grown into one of the largest community health networks, focusing on the needs of the underserved population in the country with 60 health centers across the greater Chicago area. Can you start out telling us a little bit about Access's history, its size, and its model of care?
Well, Access really grew in the early years as a primary health care system for the public housing in Chicago. And I think over the years, as I think Chicago did what, thank goodness it did, was to really bring down public housing, our majority consumer board said, let's follow the patients. And many of the patients where they found housing stock was in the far edges of the city on the south and into the suburban market. And so as we started out, we started also developing more partnerships. In our very early years, and even now, our key partner is Mount Sinai Hospital, which has had a long, long history of serving the underserved in Chicago. And so through this partnership, and as we understood not only how we can create a seamless system of care, we sought out other hospital systems in the same fashion as we moved out more into the suburban market. One of our tenets is that any resident deserves affordable and accessible healthcare access in one's own community. And they shouldn't have to take a train and two buses to get to a place where they think they would receive care or that they would even be welcomed.
Well, Donna, that's a wonderful example of what we would call wherever you are healthcare that you've pioneered in Chicago, and it sounds like that's been very successful. On the more recent news, Access has had a very good piece of news, a major grant from the National Institute of Health to build your Ashland Center for Health and Learning, the nation's first research center dedicated to closing the gap in racial and ethnic health disparities. So we congratulate you on that. And we were struck by the comments that the center is intentionally placed next to your Englewood Health Center so that the community can be fully engaged in the effort. And we'd love to hear about what form will this engagement take? What sort of community participatory research are you planning, and what have you identified as priority areas for study?
We have had a long history at Access in serving underserved communities. One that historically has been underserved in Chicago is a community called Englewood. And in this community, 68% of the residents live in poverty. Health-wise, the community grasps with heart disease, cancer, and diabetes. Over the last 12 years, this health center has grown from taking care of 2,000 patient visits annually to over 13,000 patient visits annually. And so we know the need is there. When we started looking at a replacement health center, we also got the idea that part of who we are is also looking at healthcare disparities and the value that research can bring in helping our families, our communities understand those disparities and also understand what they need to do to address that. So again, we applied. We got a National Institute of Health grant, $6.7 million, to build a research center, which we are calling the Access Center for Health and Learning. And the reason why we're saying that, it's because we know for many people, especially in communities of color, the whole idea of research isn't always something positive. We know that most research is conducted on the general population, usually in Caucasian communities, and usually less than 4% really focuses on minority communities. So this is our way of really starting to be a game changer in that. And through this 17,000 square foot facility that will be open in the spring of 2013, it's about how do you engage the community different about addressing those health care disparities and through looking at best practices, evidence-based approaches, and research. And so we're not saying if we build it, they will come. What we said is let's take a pause, and along the way, let's ask the community what they would want and how they would want it. And so we've had lots of focus groups, and we continue to have focus groups on the input. Not only an input about what the research will be about, but also the design of the building. We're also happy that on the campus, and we're calling it our campus, that we're also going to have a Center for Healthy Living, a community resource center. And so we're looking at putting things like legal support in, nutritional support, even a kitchen to teach people how to cook, and also oral health or dental services.
Well, Donna, that is a wonderful holistic approach to eliminating health disparities in a collaborative partnership with your patients, and certainly consistent with the national goals. Tell us a little bit about some of your initiatives that might align with the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, particularly around technology. How are you using it to change the delivery model? And particularly because you're managing such a huge system, 60 health centers, walk us through some of the innovations that you have underway.
Absolutely. We constructed what we knew would be our best processes and practices to engage our patients. We hired our first CIO, who's also a registered nurse. And she's actually a background pediatric nurse, but she's had a long history of not only understanding the clinical side of the business, but then the information technology. That has been a combination that working with our providers and other clinical staff, it has been a real treat on how everything's coming together. We've picked our software system. It's Epic. And it's one in which, as we're navigating and making our changes to our approach in care, that we're also then having it realized through how we're setting up our electronic medical record. But when we were doing this, part of, and again, this is around addressing healthcare disparities and how do you start giving power into the patient and in the patient's hands. And so it was very important that our patients had access to information. And so many of our patients, English isn't their first language, literacy is an issue. And so what we're doing now is now really working on creating that patient portal that not only will give the patient access to information, but to do it in a way that the patient can navigate, guide, and that it can be one that is not, that the patient is not intimidated by, but one in which they can embrace. Some of the other things we're doing, again, when we're talking about our hospital partners, and how do you get people in the right portals of care? And so at University of Chicago, which is one of our partners, in which we have specialists from University of Chicago to come into several of our health centers, we're in a community where many times people will choose a hospital ED rather than to have a primary health care home. And so for those patients that show up in the ED, they're not assigned. They come in there with an ambulatory sensitive condition, and they identify that, yes, I need a health care home. You know, 5-8 years ago, it used to be, well, maybe here's a brochure, or here, let me point out the door to where a community health center is. Now we've trained about 15 or 20 staff at University of Chicago that can now go into our system, make those appointments. So as someone's leaving the ED, they walk out with the appointment that says 2:00 Thursday, you've got an appointment with Dr. Tracy Muhammad.
Donna, the ability to do everything you've described and the ability to offer a patient-centered medical home to every client or every patient is dependent, of course, on having this robust primary care provider workforce. Mm-hmm. And with the growth and the expansion that we have, that's a real issue in most communities across the country, even in large urban areas where you have lots of medical schools and lots of training going on. Having primary care providers who are trained to a model of care, as well as the content of care, is a critical issue. What role is Access playing in training the next generation? What are your initiatives around training, whether it's physicians or nurse practitioners, pharmacists, other people? Tell us about that.
Well, you know, we're lucky in Chicago because I said, you know, almost on every corner there's some type of education. But the key is building those relationships. So from medical assistant schools to nursing, advanced practice nursing, medical schools, we've built long relationships. In fact, at Access, we host a couple of residency programs at our health centers, and I was just excited because we've also, I think we're in our second year of having an ESPRT grant of focusing on medical residency education on substance use. But it's also about, as part of our premise, saying that we are a teaching and a learning organization. And I think every opportunity that we have to work with those schools so that, one, we can impact and talk about the work that community health centers and primary care and communities and to demonstrate the impact, the positive impact we have. For us at Access, though, it not only starts with those partnerships, but as a community health center about 3 years ago, we made the decision that as a teaching and learning organization, we're also going to invest in our own. So for the last 3 years, we've been putting back in our budgets $6,000 to $10,000 scholarships. Half of them are for those wanting to become a nurse, and many of our medical assistants want to eventually become professional nurses. We are also, though, working with our medical assistants to create a clinical ladder curriculum.
This is Conversations in Healthcare. Today we're speaking with Donna Thompson, Chief Executive Officer of Access Community Health Network in Chicago. Donna, patient-centered medical homes and accountable care organizations are starting to change the way healthcare policy leaders like yourself and Americans think about healthcare. What's your view about how these models will change the healthcare delivery system in Chicago?
I think the interesting piece is that when a lot of times when someone thinks about accountable care organizations, it starts from a premise of the hospital. But the reality is that for navigating patients and really making sure that the patient's in the right place at the right time, getting the right service, the right care, it starts with that relationship with the primary care provider. And so at Access, you know, a large part of our role is to really make sure that as the accountable care organization and figuring out, because there's still a lot of grayness of what that will be like, it's also our opportunity as a community health center network and also an FQHC to say, we've been doing cost-effective, great primary care, even in our system, specialty care and Access for a lot of years.
Donna, I know that prevention and health promotion, as you've made it so clear, is really important to you, as well as upstream early detection of disease. I know that's a subject very near and dear to your heart as a nurse and as a CEO of Access. Tell us about some of your specific initiatives that you've designed or led, particularly around early detection of cancer and other diseases that we can make a big impact on if we can just get there early enough.
Absolutely. I think one of our hallmarks has been our work around breast cancer. About 15 years ago, we received a REACH 2010 CDC grant, and that was really one to go out addressing healthcare disparities for African American and Latino women around early detection. That was a education grant. There was no diagnostics or really healthcare interventions attached to that. And as we were working with the faith community and really guiding women of the church on how they could go out with the curriculum and to teach other women the value of a screening, one woman looked at me and said, well, you know, this is great, but what do you do if a woman's uninsured? Well, where can she go for care? Where can she go and get a mammogram? You know, your primary care, but you don't have a mammogram machine in your health centers. And so I remember looking and going, oh my gosh, you're right. So the first couple of years I went hat in hand, going around to different hospital CEOs saying, could you give us 40 or 50 free mammograms? And some were polite, but many were saying, well, I could, but what if it is cancer, then, you know, how am I on the hook? And what it started painting for me is that even when you're looking at how do you start addressing prevention and how do you start addressing healthcare disparities, how fractured and inconsistent the approaches are based on the payer or lack of having a payer. And so out of that, we really pulled together women and advocated for state funding to address low-income women who many were working but did not have the ability to get in and get screened. Starting in 2004, it's called the Stand Against Cancer, and that's been a line item in the budget for the state of Illinois. And it's allowed us throughout the state to really build on an awareness campaign that then we started in 2007 called Pen a Sister. And this awareness campaign happens on Mother's Day. And this last past Mother's Day, 500,000 women in Illinois stood in their house of worship and took a public pledge to get screened and also to bring awareness that what I call the C word isn't a death sentence, and that early detection does save lives. When we're doing this, we're asking not only for many times a survivor or to, you know, to bring attention to the healthcare disparity in African-American and Latino women, even though that they have less incidence, many times when they get diagnosed, it's usually late on stage, and unfortunately the outcome is not good. And so bringing out these awareness campaigns, I had the pleasure of sitting in one church and participating. I started hearing women talking about, oh yes, and we're going to start walking groups because we know the importance of, you know, of how obesity plays in increasing the risk for breast cancer.
Well, what a wonderful way to celebrate Mother's Day. Donna, we like to ask all of our guests this final question. When you look around the country and the world, what do you see in terms of innovation, and who should our listeners at Conversation be keeping an eye on?
Well, you know, I'm a biased person. Where I see a lot of the biggest innovation is the work of community health centers. I think that, when we talk about how do you do more sometimes with limited resources, community health centers have really gotten out into the communities and really created infrastructures that have had the most impact in especially marginalized individuals.
Today, we've been speaking with Donna Thompson, Chief Executive Officer of Access Community Health Network in Chicago. Donna, thanks so much for talking with us today on Conversations.
Thank you both.
Each week, Conversations highlights a bright idea about how to make wellness a part of our communities and everyday lives. This week's bright idea focuses on a unique food bus that brings fresh fruits and vegetables to Chicago's neighborhoods where healthy options are scarce. More than 500,000 people in Chicago live in food deserts with little to no choice for healthy foods. A 2006 study found that residents in Chicago's south and west sides had to travel twice as far to access grocery stores. These communities are littered with fast food restaurants and fatty processed foods. One resident of Englewood section of Chicago, Stephen Casey, wanted to change that. Along with some other neighborhood activists, he formed a grassroots organization called Food Desert Action. For years, the group ran into trouble finding a grocery store that was willing to invest in the neighborhood. National chains have difficulty finding affordable urban land to support their high-cost operation, and independent stores don't want to gamble on unproven locations. So the group took matters into their own hands. They convinced the Chicago Transit Authority to donate an old city bus, which they have converted into a mobile produce stand by replacing the chairs and vents with shelves and refrigerator unit. For now, the produce comes from a mixed source of local and organic, and plans are in works to connect with local farmers and the Chicago Botanic Gardens Green Youth Farm. the Fresh Moves bus will roll out into the Chicago streets this month and make stops at local churches, health centers, and schools that have agreed to partner. For now, Food Desert Action has just one bus, but it hopes to get 12 more outfitted to serve other communities in the Chicago area soon. A solution that addresses multi-neighborhood needs for healthy, fresh food quickly and efficiently. Now that's a bright idea.
This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Margaret Flinter.
And I'm Mark Maselli. Peace and health.
Conversations on Healthcare, broadcast from the campus of Wesleyan University at WESU, streaming live at WESUFM.org, and brought to you by the Community Health Center.